Welcome to Hype. My name is Selena, and we are back this week with another special episode dedicated to The 100, the CW show currently in its third season. I'm joined by Kristen and Caitlin, both from Hypeable.com, and we are very excited to be taking over Hype for another week because we are four episodes into season three of The 100, and crap has gone down, to to put it that way. There's a lot to discuss, and in lieu of having an actual The 100 podcast on Hypeable.com at the moment, we are at least able to take over Hype every once in a while for these specials. So if you do like this podcast and if you want us to do more talking about The 100, then let us know. You can do that either on Twitter at HypeableHype. You can do it on Hypeable.com, which is HYPABLE.com. And you can also email us, hype@hypeable.com. We actually had some great feedback from you guys ahead of this episode, which we'll be talking about at the end of the show. So we're back to talk about The 100. Caitlin wasn't on our first one, but you did join us for the normal episode of Hype to share your thoughts.
Yes, I was very sad that I didn't get to join.
I'm just happy that you're both here this week to talk about Bellamy and Lexa and all the other stuff. And I know that at least Caitlin is very mad and has some strong words.
I'm tamping down the anger. I'm trying to see the other side.
Okay.
It's hard.
I'm totally 100% on the other side, so we'll be good. We'll have conflicting viewpoints. So we should be okay. We have some good discussion coming up. But before we get into the specifics of the fourth episode, which was Watch the Thrones, I just want to hear from you guys, because we're four episodes into season three now. The first episode was amazing, but what do you guys think about the season so far?
I mean, considering where we left season two and the destruction of Mount Weather, it was hard to think about where they were going to take off from there and how this was going to work. And I was worried, I'm not going to lie, because some series, when they have a season as good as season two was for the 100, have trouble like picking up where they left off and like keeping the momentum moving. Like I think it was season two of Arrow that was just absolutely magnificent. Like everything about the second half of season two was fabulous, and then season three it was
terrible.
Like they had a lot of trouble matching the intensity, so I was nervous that season three, all of these new viewers were watching and we had all these new people that had caught up and that had, you know, heard about how great it was, we're going to be disappointed. But it's been absolutely amazing so far. I have not been let down by a single episode. Like they've kept it going, and I'm so glad, so glad, because, you know, I got people watching the show too, and now I'm really excited. I'm like, you know, just like finally someone who seems to understand like how to keep the tension high even after such a great season. So
I really enjoyed the first three episodes of the season, and like,
oh god,
half
I'm so glad that
liked,
we didn't also have Kyle on this. Not that I don't want him on the podcast, but it would have just been too much.
Yeah,
I mean, I liked half of the story in this episode. I didn't like the other half, which we will get to. But I thought the first three episodes were all the way around strong, and I was really impressed with the way, like Kristen said, they just kept ratcheting up the tension and introducing new aspects to the world that we've heard about but haven't seen yet, because there's so much of this world that we haven't seen because it's been so limited to the scope of where they landed. And so I'm intrigued by seeing the world get bigger, but some of the character stuff is working for me and some of it not so much.
Okay, well, we'll get into that in depth, I'm sure. And of course, we all know you're talking about Jasper, right? No? Wrong?
Well, there's wrong that one. Too.
No.
There's that too.
There's that too. Well, we'll get into all of that. But yeah, no, I think it's such a good point you bring up, though, Kristen, about the third season of shows, because I was sitting here thinking about Lost, which is like the example of how you set your expectations so high in the first season, which is, if either of you guys have seen it, a spectacular first season. Then you go to season two, which sort of amps down. What's the opposite of amp up? I don't know. Base down the tension. Where
tamp down, maybe.
Where you know, you had a lot of character stuff, you had further explorations, but they were like, it was very slow. And then you got to season three, and by that point people were like, oh my god, enough of like Jack and the others, and then they did that whole time jump and sort of changed it up a bit, which was probably the only way they could have really proceeded with at that point. Where you have something like The 100 by contrast, which is like, I said, I think in one of my recaps, I was like, this is the Mad Max Fury Road season. And I feel like that's like, that's the whole show. It's like you start off just like, dong, 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 and kill Wells, and Charlotte jumps off a cliff, and like Murphy almost ruins everything, and the others, and not the others, the grounders, the other others. And then, boom, everything blows up. And then comes season two and things are like, ah, Finn dies and Lexa and more grounders and more explosions and more things blow up and another genocide. It's like, that's how they cap off each season. and then season three, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I am along for the ride. Like, and again, we'll get to the Bellamy stuff. But like, for me, that's part of the journey, and that's part of raising the stakes, and that's part of sort of every emotion being like stretched to the limit, and all of these characters sort of bending or breaking in the face of this unbelievable situation that they're in. And I thought it was a really brave and very understandably controversial decision, but I am very intrigued. I love that they sort of dared to do it, and I also don't necessarily think it's very out of character, but again, we're getting so ahead of ourselves. I really want to save it. I want to save the Bellamy mm-hmm. stuff, because I want to talk about the stuff that we all know is awesome, which yeah. is Lexa, warrior princess, Katniss ruling the world.
Yeah, I mean, jeez, everything about Lexa in this episode was just great.
Yeah,
from her letting Ice Nation make their move, like mm-hmm. she saw it coming when I forget the name of the Ice Queen,
Naya
yeah. is that it, she, when she makes her move, when she's brought in chains, and you know, she's, and the ambassadors start to stand with her, Lex's right hand buddy, Mr. Bald Guy with all the tattoos, is like, he's ready to take him down, like he's ready to get rid of those that are standing against her, and Lex is like, no, let her make her move, like mm-hmm. let this happen, because other words, we're never gonna have peace, like this is never gonna work if I constantly try and keep people from moving against me. And it's so, like, it's brave of her, it's so smart of her, like to let all of this play out despite whatever doubts she may have had. It ended up working out in her favor. It's just so well done. I loved everything about Lexa in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. I thought Lexa was great. It just showed not only her confidence and her abilities, like as a fighter, but also like her political prowess, that she knew she was several steps ahead. Like Ice Nation is several steps ahead, but Lexa is just as much, because she might be taken aback by the attack that happens, but then she can make moves quickly in response to it. Like, she's completely aware of the implications of choosing a champion in her stead. She knows she has to do that. So it's really good for her, both on, like, she's a really good fighter and also a really good politician front.
It's true. I mean, it's so true. And I think that's one of the things where at the end of last season, we sort of had that Finn Bellamy sort of a bit of a betrayal moment, where we're like, holy crap, like she actually stepped back. She left Clark and her people in mm-hmm. order to save her own people. But that's how she looks at every situation. You know, Lexa wants peace for her people. Like, she wants peace and she wants to protect her people. That's like her two driving forces in everything she does. And that's why I think she sort of sees herself as a chess piece, which is pretty incredible. She has no ego in that sense. She knows her value and she knows her purpose. And she knows that if, as Caitlin said, like, if she had chosen someone to fight for her, even if that person won, that wouldn't matter, because Lexa herself, you know, the all-important strength that the Grounders recognize, Lexa herself wouldn't have the strength. And that's why not only playing it the way she did, not only fighting on her own, but choosing or figuring out that if she killed Rowan, she'd still have the Ice Queen sort of turning the others against her. By killing the Ice Queen, she gets rid of her greatest enemy, and she puts a man on the throne who, like, he literally owes her his life now, I assume, because she spared his life. And she proved that she is stronger, physically stronger, than the current ruler of the Ice Nation. And it was just, so good.
And between her sparing Rowan's life and Clark having his respect...
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of good happening between the three of them right now. And now, like, Lexa and Roan and Clark, I think, have a lot of work that they can do. Like, the three of them together could be a force. Now, we'll see how other events complicate that.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, knowing the respect that they have for each other and after what Lexa did here, like, I was so excited at the end of this fight with how... like, politics were standing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just, yeah, it was, it looked really promising.
It did there for a while. Because, yeah, you're right. I mean, Lexa, and that's sort of the big tragedy of this episode in a way, is that Lexa, those two parallel stories of Lexa getting so close to getting everything not only she wants, but Clark wants. Like, she's securing peace for everyone. And then, of all people, it's not the Ice Nation that messes that up. It's the Sky people that mess that up. And sort of it's poetic irony at its finest, I think.
That whole Nightblood thing, I think, is also really cool.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know what it really means, except that it goes back to the First Commander. But the fact that there are children that are born with, like, different color blood, and they're the only ones that are basically the options for commanders, like... they are who the commander will be chosen from. I think that's a really interesting concept.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I sort of interpreted, because of some of the things they've said over the past couple of seasons, I sort of interpreted it that anyone can be chosen for command if the sign, like, if the signs point to them. But because the Nightbloods are kind of trained for it, I think the Grounders are probably more willing to see signs pointing to them. So I keep saying we have to at some point have a point when Lexa dies and someone is chosen that isn't who we expected, whether it's Clark, whether it's Octavia, or it's, I don't know, whoever the hell, Raven. She needs a good storyline. That could be it for her. So I feel like maybe that's what it is that these children are, like, literally, they are royalty, you know. They have this blue blood in their veins, and it's probably some genetic mutation, you know, back from when the bombs went off, you know, somehow this turned some people's blood to tar or whatever it is. Yeah.
I want to see this ritual, because from Anya and Clexa, Lexa, wow, I can't talk.
Same thing at this point.
Freudian slip, it's all good.
All right.
From both of them, like, we heard that their spirit chooses the next commander. Like, I'm so curious as to what that is. Like, is it a ceremony where the next commander is chosen? Is there a battle in which all the Nightbloods, like, take part in whoever survives wins? Like,
make Hunger Games.
I am so curious as to how they choose the next commander.
But you know that if we see that, that means that Lexa is gone. So, like, I don't really want to. Just give her a flashback and we can see how she gets chosen.
They have to believe she's dead.
Okay.
So maybe she's not dead, but maybe they all think she's dead.
I'm listening.
I'm curious. Like, I'm so beyond curious. I just want Lexa to describe it to Clark. Like, I want her to tell us how she became commander, or, you know, something like that. Because I just think that ceremony has to be crazy.
Now, I know where your loyalties lie, Kristen, but how about you, Caitlin? What are you on this Clexa Bellark scale of shipping?
I am a Bellark shipper.
Okay, interesting. I guess I'll be taking the Clexa side in this. To be honest, and I'm very, very honest about this, I like them both, and I'm happy with either or neither, or just one and then the other. I don't care. I think they're both very, very, very interesting because I like all three characters involved. So it's like whatever combination is exactly interesting. But right now, I am all about Clexa. I think it's spectacularly well done, especially after what happened at the end of last season, like the trust that needs to be rebuilt and how they're sort of, they clearly respect each other, and like the way that Clexa is just so in love with her, it's amazing. And this strong commander, and I love Clexa because she's like, she has this whole strong like leader, and then she's very, very compassionate. You know, we see her with her with the Nightbloods, and we see her just in general being very fair. And then she has this side where she looks at Clark, and she's just like, you know. And I love that complexity that brings out in both of them. And I think it's great.
I was gonna say, I want to make that clear too. I also do love Clexa and Clark and Clexa. I love their dynamic. Like, I might, you know, in my hardest of hearts, hope that Bellamy and Clark have something. Ultimately, like, I love the Bellamy Clark friendship so much. Like, they are nowhere near ready for any of the shippy craziness to go down. Like, they
especially
need,
not right now.
Especially now. So it's like, yeah, as much as I love Bellamy and Clark, and I, you know, I ultimately want it to get there, I love what's going on with Clark and Clexa right now. So there's, you know, I might join the Bellark shipping, but it's not in replacement of Clexa. Like, I really do love their dynamic too. Mm.
And that's the sign of a good story, is that it flows, you know? It's not like this or nothing.
Yeah, I'm in no way opposed to seeing Clark and Clexa explore what there is between them at all. Like, I enjoy their chemistry and the dynamic that is between them, because it's so constantly evolving. I find it fascinating.
Yeah, same. Did you guys see the Cass Morgan short story that she put out yesterday on Valentine's? That was adorable.
Yes, I only got to read about half of it before I got interrupted last night, but I fully plan on finishing it because it was really cute.
It's very, very sweet. And obviously, it's book compliant, not show compliant, because Cass Morgan writes the books, not the show. But it's still very, very, very cute. And a good timing, too, because the Bellark shippers needed a little something after everything. Anything else you guys want to talk about the Clexa storyline? Clexa, see, I'm doing it too. I guess that's a no. Yeah. You just want to talk about Bellamy. I see how it is.
And Pike.
And, oh God, let's talk about Pike, everybody. Yay.
Do we have to?
The only thing I would say, I mean, obviously we have to just recap just so we all know what's going on, is that also the parallel storyline to Clexa being awesome this week was that Pike is sort of stirring up this doctrine of hate he has for all grounders, which just infuriates me so much. In Arcadia, he is basically... we're dealing with the repercussions of the Ice Nation wiping out all the farm station people that had taken refuge in Mount Weather. And they have this memorial service, and we meet Miller's boyfriend, who is not Monty, whatever. Okay. Which is great. You know, he didn't die, which is amazing. You know, Monty's mother didn't die either, although she ends up ends up joining Pike's like hate group for the grounders. But so basically he's stirring up this really scary atmosphere where he wants, and Kane and Abby do their best to stop it. Lincoln does his best to stop it. He gets knocked down. He gets back up again. They're never going to keep him down. And basically it ends with him bringing Bellamy to his side and having them get guns, and he wants to go and eradicate the peacekeeping troops led by Indra that Lexa has ordered to protect Arcadia. I think this is so insane. Like, to me, it doesn't make... I know what he's been through, but oh my god.
Yeah, it seems like a dramatic overreaction on his part. Mm-hmm. Because they landed in Ice Nation, and the only grounders they had really had interaction with were Ice Nation grounders. Mm-hmm. It's colored his view of anyone who existed on the ground before Sky Crew landed. Like, for some reason, he cannot see mm-hmm. that different clans are different people. They have different rules and different standards, and they live differently. He can't see that, and I don't understand where that came from.
I think the problem is that his development or lack thereof has been so rushed. We're being told everything about his experience and we're not seeing it, which is not good storytelling. Like, the rule is show, don't tell, and we are only being told this is what he experienced. So maybe if we saw a flashback of like some horrific things that the Ice Nation did to Farm Station or something, it might make him seem a little more sympathetic in his leanings. But just because we're just not getting any of it, it's hard to emotionally invest in him because we just don't see it at all.
Well, I would say to that, I think that's part of the reason why I actually really think that the Bellamy part of all this makes a lot of sense, because we have seen everything that's led Bellamy to feel this way. And obviously for Pike, we have seen that most of his people got killed in Mount Weather after he'd fought so hard to keep them alive. So it's not that we necessarily haven't seen it, but I think for me that it just feels Pike, like, he feels a little bit like a plot device, which I guess he is a plot device. So, but it's just like you were saying, I feel like his complete lack of ability to understand that the Ice Nation and Tree Crew are different, even though he was at the summit and he saw Alexa and he saw all the tribes, he knows how it works. His complete, like, if refusal to understand that, even though he seems like a logical person and even though he has logical people all around him shouting it at him, that, hello, they're not the same. Like, if you do this, if you kill these 300 grounders, you're not saving us. You are basically ensuring that we will be killed, because there are a lot of, even if they were all the same, there's a lot more than 300 on the ground, you know, and they're all going to come for you if you do this one thing. But at the same time, though, what I will say sort of in Pike's defense is that, unfortunately, these types of people live in the real world. And I think part of our frustration with his lack of ability to understand is kind of reflective of how we feel about people. I mean, people have said this is a lot like Trump, and it's like,
that's what I was going to say. He's Donald Trump. He's Trump. A caricature of a human being.
Exactly, but people like that exist in real life. Like, there are people, unfortunately, all through history who have said all XYZ group of people are the same, and they are less, they are worthless. We can kill them all and secure peace for our people. That's how, like, the world works. So I think what is frustrating isn't so much that what he does is unrealistic, it's just that we are confronted with it. We're very close to him. We're almost standing in the group of people saying, hello, you're wrong, you're gonna make this worse for everyone, and he just isn't hearing it.
And here's my disagreement with that, Selena, that reality doesn't always make for good storytelling. Just because something is realistic or applies to the real world doesn't make it a good story.
Okay, that's fair. I think that why I'm sort of, I was very mad. It's kind of like with Lexa, like, my instant reaction last season was like, rah, rage, I hate this. And then I was like, okay, but if I'm going to think about this, it makes a lot of sense. And that's why I have to say, well, I sort of applaud the show in that way for putting a character like this on the screen, because it is a very strong commentary on what's happening in real life. And I think, you know, Battlestar Galactica did much the same thing to the same effect. And I think there's power in having that kind of anger at a fictional character.
The man is also, he's crazy if he thinks that Sky Crew can defend themselves against the entirety of the Grounder Nation. Like, he seems to think that killing these 300 grounders and sending a quote-unquote message to the rest of them is going to be enough to, like, ward them away from Arcadia, and that from then on they'll be able to defend themselves no matter what. He's crazy. Like, I don't know what it is that makes him think that that's a possibility. He wasn't able to defend his own people when they were stuck in Ice Nation. He has no idea what has gone down at Camp Jaha before it was Arcadia. He has no idea. So I literally don't understand the delusions that this man has that they can defend themselves. That's the other thing that gets me, is there's no way that that's a thing. Like, how does he believe that's true?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and even more amazingly, how does no one of the people following him sort of stop and go, like, even you know, yeah, my girl Harper, who you can do no wrong, stepped aside to let them out. And I was like, hello.
It's Monroe.
Very, very, yes. And Monroe as well. It's very, it makes you feel a lot of feelings. And in my, again, we have different views on this. In my opinion, it's a good thing that we feel this mad. But in Caitlin's opinion, obviously, you think it was a bit of a trick, or...
I just don't think Pike works as a character. He's too one-dimensional to fit in a nuanced story. And the thing that the 100 has done so well up until this point is explore stories with a lot of nuance, that there's a lot of gray area, and there's nothing gray about Pike, and that just feels completely out of tone with everything else the show likes to explore. So his one dimensionality just doesn't fit with the rest of the show for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say to that, I think that's fair, but I would say give it time, because, I mean, I don't know how long he's going to be on the show, but he's Chancellor now, so...
Which is another problem that I have.
Right, well, yes. You know, I just feel like... I'm sorry, what are you going to say?
I think they're moving too fast with him, because we have seen him interact with, like, Kane and Abby and Bellamy and some of his own followers. So how does... That doesn't tell us how that translates to how everyone else in Arcadia reacts to them, because you would think most of them, being logical people who have interacted with grounders, would be like, dude, you crazy. So how does that get him elected? Like, I would have liked maybe an episode that sees, or like bits and pieces of how other people react to him, to give us an indication that he might be a player in that. Like, mm-hmm. It's too fast for me.
It's the same reason that Trump is maybe going to be a real contender for a presidency. I mean, it really is.
The only thing I can think of that they tried to use to sell us on why Pike would be popular in Arcadia is his exposure of Kane's mark, that they are now the 13th clan. Like... Mm. I think Pike was using that as a scare tactic. Like, look where your previous leadership has taken you. They want you to be grounders. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not just going to be Sky Crew. Like, he's joining them. They're going to be grounders, and they're going to make you grounders. Like, I think that was meant to be a scene that made you see where people would be terrified of following anyone but Pike. Again, I don't know if it was successful. I don't think it was. I still can't see anything in Pike's, you know, view. Like, it's hard to understand how he is, but I think that may have been what they were attempting to do.
Yeah. And I will say as well, I mean, again, one of the things that the 100 does so well, and it doesn't, like, take away all of your criticism, but I think one of the things the 100 does so well, and it sets up a character for you to feel a certain way about them, and then within the span of like 4 or 5 episodes, you will completely change your mind. Because if you looked at someone like Murphy in season 1, or even Kane, you know, whose first thing on screen was to have Abby almost floated, like, he would have floated her because he didn't like her.
Yeah,
or Bellamy as well, and we'll get into that with him. But I think that Pike, depending on how long he sticks around, we've already seen from the promo next week that it appears that he is going to follow through with his plan, and then he's going to have to deal with the repercussions of that. And when the dust settles, I think we're going to get to see a more nuanced side of him. Or, you know, they're just going to kill him off and focus on Bellamy's reaction, which would work too. So I will say give it time. That's sort of my what I've taken away from watching this show, is that you can't ever trust that one person is going to remain one thing.
Just thinking out loud and thinking largely of the grounders that are a part of Sky Crew, aka Lincoln, or like Nico, who has recently been like brought in to help Abby with the healing and has now brought grounders to Arcadia for healing.
Yeah.
Like, what happens to them? Like, what is Pike just going to throw them out? Are they done? Like, they've been a trusted part of this whole group. Like, Nico's never been excluded thanks to Octavia. So what is, you know, how does Pike handle that as Chancellor? Does he literally throw them out the gate and then shoot them? Or are they going to, you know, kind of be grandfathered in and taken care of? It's a minor thing, but it was just something that I thought about while I was watching the episode.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, sort of related to that, Lincoln chose to stay, you know, rather than go and join, thank God, go and join Indra with like Octavia wanted. He wants to stay. He's insisting on the fact that he is a Sky Crew now, and he wants to stay to uphold the peace. And I wonder how he and Pike are going to interact, if they're going to interact at all.
Well, isn't there a kill order on Lincoln?
No, they lifted that.
At the council meeting.
Yeah.
Lexa supposedly lifted it.
Yeah.
I did not remember that.
It was a very small thing.
Octavia says it when she says, Indra's outside, you know, with 300 people, they've lifted the kill order, we can join her. Like, it's, she literally spits it out all at once.
Mm. Yeah, Kristen knows, she's just watched the episode for a second time. She's like, ask her anything. She'll remember.
Oh, God. No, not that. Please, God.
What color shirt wasn't it? So let's, guys, it's time. We can't put it off any longer. I was hoping that you guys would get your anger out at Pike, and now you would be much more lenient. But we'll see how that tactic goes. Bellamy, let's talk. Who wants to start?
Can I just say I'm not mad at Bellamy? I'm mad at the way his character arc was written. Like, okay. My anger is less directed at the character and more the writing, because feel too separate for me.
Well, tell me why.
It doesn't, like... I think I also have an issue with, like, him being motivated by Gina's death, because, again, she's not a character we spend enough time with to have any emotional investment, at least for me. So I was like, oh, they fridged her. Oh, darn. Moving on. Like, that really doesn't give me emotional investment, or I guess I struggle for that to be the thing that, like, pushes him to what does not feel like a good extension of the development he's gone through. And I know character development isn't linear, but it just doesn't feel like, again, with the nuanced portrayal of Bellamy that we have seen so far, like, he is capable of doing some pretty crappy things because he has done that, but he has developed so much that it just feels out of line with that motivation. The motivation feels too weak for me.
What is your position, Kristen?
It's hard, because I know that Bellamy is hurting, and just watching him, I didn't have specific feelings towards Gina. I don't think any of us were supposed to. I think the only reason we were introduced to her was to A, see that Bellamy didn't just sit around waiting for Clark to come back, and B, that he moved on, found someone who he cared about, and then that person was ripped away from him because of his own decisions. That was Gina's purpose. Like, that was the entire reason her character existed.
Which is problematic in and of itself.
Right. But, I mean, on a show with a cast this big, like, I let it slide, because they needed some reason for Bellamy to be involved in all this. But watching Bellamy's, how upset he was at the memorial, and the fact that no one was there for him during that. Pike was leading the memorial. Monroe and Harper were sitting there, but nobody from the original 100 was sitting by his side there for him. Octavia wasn't there. Lincoln walks in later. Raven wasn't there. Like, nobody was there for him in that moment. If any of them, Monty, anyone, had been sitting next to him, holding his hand and trying to comfort him through this time, I feel like it would be a different Bellamy. He's been there for people and tried to help them through their struggles, Finn and everyone else. And seeing that nobody was like physically there for him in that situation makes me think that he's feeling more abandoned than ever before. His, you know, he doesn't have anyone that's sitting by his side making sure he gets through this like Monty is for Jasper and like he was for Clark after Finn and all of that. I feel like that's driving a lot of this, is that he's feeling alone. He's feeling abandoned. Clark chose Lexa over him. And so now Pike has chosen him and Bellamy is willing to stay by his side because he needs someone to need him. That's Bellamy's thing. Like, he's always needed to be needed. And the fact that everybody's just kind of left him to the wayside, I think it broke him more than we know. And that's the only reason why I can see where Bellamy's at. Like, I can see why he's made the really terrible, horrible choices that he's making. Last season, when we saw Finn make some very questionable, mm-hmm. awful decisions, we all said the same thing. Like, it doesn't feel, you know, it doesn't feel right for him. It's more because we don't want him to make the mistakes, but he made them and he ended up paying for them. I don't want the same thing to happen to Bellamy, but at this point, like, he had to make his own choices. He had to make his own mistakes.
Right. You know what I think is so interesting about this debate, because we kind of have, and I have some thoughts on my own. Oh, go figure. But I think what's so interesting is that we are sort of going back to, and it feels so hypocritical for us to be here on a podcast going, here's how storytelling works. But when Caitlin, you said something earlier about show don't tell, which it is sort of a balance all the time, because that's what I said I love so much about The 100, especially this season, is its sort of breakneck pace. It's how quick you get whiplash trying to keep up with how everyone's changing and what everyone's doing and why they're doing it and where's Raven and where's Ja, in case anyone was wondering. He hasn't been there for two episodes. I care about that storyline. And I think to maintain that drive, things like the internal life of the characters, there isn't as much time for that. And you can absolutely be of the opinion that there isn't enough time for things like this to feel organic. Because Bellamy, unlike Pike, we've known Bellamy for a long time. We've seen him. We've even had a flashback showing how when he was a kid, we've seen him for a long time. We've seen him make a lot of good choices and a lot of really bad choices. And when we get into the nitty-gritty of that, when we analyze it, when we go back and say, okay, well, Bellamy basically spent his entire life taking care of his sister inside of that tiny room, and everyone on the outside was a threat. So he has that sort of us versus them mindset very, very intensely. When we go into stuff like that and everything, Kristen, you just said, I think what he is doing right now makes total sense. But when you look at it from sort of a more critical story view and you go, okay, that might be true, but you have to talk your way to that conclusion. You have to be a huge Bellamy fan who is very invested in his character and who cares about his inner development to understand his motivation. Is that a bad thing? Does that mean that the show hasn't done enough to prepare us for that? Or is The 100, does it work because we have to do a lot of the work ourselves?
That's kind of my issue, is that you should not have to make that many mental gymnastics to make a story arc work. Like, you can really enjoy a fast pace, but when it comes at the expense of your characters, then maybe we need to slow down a couple of miles per hour. You can still go fast with taking a little bit of time to spend with the characters so that all the actions have meaning. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really felt before watching the show that it really, the pace has sacrificed character the way I have with this storyline.
I have to admit, I really enjoy the mental gymnastics. Because that's also because I do the recap. Or I don't know. I enjoy having to work for the information. But I think you are absolutely right. And it is sort of a problem for TV shows sometimes that they get too internal. Like, they expect that their audience is on the same page, that they were in the writer's room with them, and it might turn people off, and we'll have to wait and see what happens. But I really hope that the show doesn't suffer for this, because I'm with Kristen on this. I think that there is sufficient explanation in Bellamy's arc for why he's doing what he's doing. And I like, too, that you were saying that about him being alone in this, Kristen, because I think that's sort of a key thing with Bellamy, is that
he doesn't do well when he's alone.
Yeah.
He needs a leader. He needs someone to help steer and guide him. And
he's been rejecting Kane, though. Like, Kane's tried to be there for him, and he's rejected him outright.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot of blood. Like, Kane and him may have made amends, or seemingly have made amends by the beginning of season 3, but there's a lot of bad blood between Bellamy and Kane and Jaha and that whole situation, that I don't know if he ever saw Kane as, like, someone he can fully trust and depend on. Whereas Clark, like, she's been his guiding force. She's been the person who's steered him correctly, who's helped to keep him from making, you know, massive, huge mistakes. And when he has made huge mistakes, she's been the one to forgive him. And seeing her walk away, I think, did way more damage than anything else could have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that and also Octavia. I mean, I know they're sort of on diverging paths and have been for a long time, but everything Bellamy's ever done has been for Octavia. Now, in the last episode, she was like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, peace out. and leaving him again. And then he was like, that's fine. That's cool. I have Gina. And now he doesn't have Gina. He doesn't have Clark. He doesn't really have Octavia because she's too busy wanting to be a grounder.
Well, and just sitting here thinking now, maybe it has to be a woman. He followed his mother and did what his mother said for so long that maybe he can't respect Kane because he's a guy, and maybe that will come to play with Pike. Right now he feels like he can trust Pike, but maybe if, you know, Clark shows up or he finally gets a chance to talk to her, maybe things change. I don't know.
That's very interesting. I really like that. That's a very good sort of observation also, because again, if we look back to season one, like, I just rewatched season one before season 3 started. He did some terrible things, you guys. Like, he left Adam. He left him hanging from a tree in pain. Like, tortured him because he made out with Octavia. And, like, it's things like that where you look at him and go, yeah, he's come a long way. But why has he come a long way? Because of Clark. Because of the perspective that Clark gave him. Because he got to have an ally. And now she's gone. And they did this whole thing at Mount Weather together. And for what? And I think, as well, his sort of very revenge-driven mindset. This is a very constant thing for Bellamy. He sees someone do something that he doesn't like, and he strikes back at them. So I think when Bellamy agrees to give Pike the guns, it does come from a revenge place. It comes from a very short-sighted, like, them versus us. They eradicated our people, now we're going to eradicate a big group of their people. And, of course, the interesting thing, too, about this whole discussion in the fan base is, as I think, Kristen, you put in the doc, too, is the question, are the fans this angry because of what Bellamy did in this episode, which was side with Pike and give them the guns without it ever coming to anything, or because of what they've seen in the promo, which is the field of dead people?
I was furious before I saw the preview.
Okay.
which is completely justified. Like, trust me, as someone who loves Bellamy and has tried to reason out why he did this, I was still just as mad walking away from the episode. Like, I don't want this for Bellamy. And I feel like there are a lot of ways and other things that we could have done with his character. And so I was just as mad as everybody else is. But there seems to be a lot of anger directed toward what is going to happen with the 300 dead. Like, everybody is, I've seen a lot of talk about he wouldn't do that, you know, we blah, blah, blah. It's just a lot of talk about it. And it made me wonder.
Maybe he,
like,
didn't.
We haven't seen it yet. Mm-hmm. We don't know what role he plays in it. We don't know if he holds the gun. Like, yes, he might be. He will be just as guilty in our eyes, I'm sure, if he plays any role in it. But we haven't seen it yet. So I'm trying to reserve judgment on what that act brings to his character until we know how he's involved.
Mm-hmm. I think that's
that
wise.
Makes sense. Yeah. Like I'm trying so hard. Like it's easy to just play it in as part of his character already and say he was involved in the killing of 300 innocent people, you know, blah, blah, blah. But we don't know that yet.
Well, I'll say that my reaction has nothing to do with the preview because I was reading this note and I couldn't even remember what was in the preview.
Okay.
Before we started talking about
well,
it.
Well, there you
so...
go. And you're definitely not alone. But I do think that that discussion of whether we are mad because it doesn't make sense for his character or because they didn't do enough to bring us into his mindset is a very prevalent one because as I've... And I don't know if you agree with all the stuff me and Kristen have been saying, Caitlin, but... I still maintain when you begin to dissect it, everything he's doing makes sense, especially in the context of what we've seen so far, which isn't a whole lot. But on the surface of watching, actually just watching and seeing what's on the screen and judging based on what's on the screen and not what you've read on Tumblr, it does have an abruptness about it.
I just keep going back to, I don't think they gave it enough emotional room to breathe. I don't feel the emotional connection to Bellamy's motivations. I don't feel an emotional connection to Pike's motivations. So my immediate response to seeing those two lining up is just like immediately like, ugh, because it just doesn't work. And I think that if they had spent even half more of an episode spending a little time with these things that you are dissecting, it would be more satisfactory. Mm-hmm. But I think they are just moving so fast that it is sacrificing character.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Do we think that Pike actually cares about Bellamy or
no.
is he just using him
yes.
to get guns and to get
yes.
what he needs?
If he cared about him, he wouldn't have manipulated his sense of self-worth to get him on his side because his entire recruitment strategy was have some drinks and let me tell you how horrible a person you are, basically.
Yeah. Like it just kind of, as I was watching him, you know, convince Bellamy during their whole drinking thing, and then they're standing there and he's telling him about, I think all it's going to take is 10 guys with automatic weapons to mow down these 300, you know, I've got the men. And he looks at Bellamy and he's like, and Bellamy, you can see Bellamy go like, that's treason, like mm-hmm. you're asking me to arm these 10 guys so you can go kill people, what the hell? And then like a moment later he's on board, and I'm like, does he care at all what this could mean for Bellamy? Does he care at all about this kid, or is he literally using him? And the second that this is all said and done and Pike casts Bellamy aside, is Bellamy gonna see exactly what he did and what he was being used to do and then come full force against Pike again? Like, we have no idea, but that was just something that kind of played in my head. Maybe it's just wish fulfillment.
Yeah, we'll see. If we don't want,
it's what I want to have
about potential Bellamy involvement, we can't really like project other things in the future either.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you guys, I mean, we have some people in fandom. I say some, we have a lot of people in fandom who are comparing Bellamy, the path that he's on right now, to the path that Finn was on last season. You sort of touched on this too, Kristen, earlier. At the end of season one, or at the beginning of season two, Finn and Bellamy were sort of on this quest together to... They thought that Clark had been captured and possibly died, and they thought their people had been eradicated. You know, they were very desperate, and Finn sort of grew more and more desperate in his attempts to find Clark again, and everything that had happened at the dropship had obviously taken a really big mental toll on him. And eventually, you know, when he went to the Peaceful Grounder village and he gunned down all those people because he believed that they had killed Clark. You know, he found the clothes. He thought that they had taken and killed Clark, and that was what he was reacting to. Now, obviously, we have Bellamy knowing that the Grounders not these grounders, other grounders, have killed everyone at Mount Weather, including Gina. And his response is, okay, well, someone else wants to take a couple of guns and go up and retaliate. Well, I'm not going to stop them. Too similar? Is it? What do you guys think about this? It's a very obvious parallel.
When I first watched the episode, my initial reaction was, this is Finn 2.0. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing exactly what Finn did. Like, why are we, you know, why are we going down this road? But again, when you take a second and step back and kind of look at what's happened, it is different. Like, there are some similarities, yes, but Bellamy and Finn were in two very different places, and it is, there are some similarities, definitely, and it's worthy of the parallel, but I can't lump them together and say this is exactly the same thing. And again, we haven't seen the next episode. We don't know how that all goes down. So once we see it and know how this massacre takes place, we'll know better whether Bellamy can be, you know, completely compared to Finn in that, you know, really weak moment, or whether it's a different scenario.
Yeah, I imagine the obvious parallels are intentional, and I have a feeling they'll go on diverging paths just to show.
We hope.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to show, like, different reactions, and because if they went down the same path, that would be too repetitive. But if we have a similar setup that takes completely different directions, then that gives interesting parallels while also telling different stories.
And also, that's one of the things that I felt like with Finn, because I think that what they did with Finn was really, really brilliant, and it was a great way for him to go out, because let's face it, like, no one really liked Finn except me and maybe like a handful of other people. I was very alone in my love of Finn, but so they did a really great thing the way that they killed him off, and it was so impactful. But I feel like what we lost out on was seeing the repercussions of him having done something like that, and seeing what would happen between him and Clark after she sort of had to take care of him, and she had to reassure him when she was so horrified by what he had done. And we sort of do have that downward spiral story going on with Jasper, but having Bellamy participate in this event, whether he actually picks up her gun or not, knowing that he had a hand in this happening, but letting him stay alive. I mean, let's assume that they're going to keep him alive, and having him work his way to that, or to some kind of, I don't want to call it like a redemption, but I guess that is kind of what it is, because Bellamy has done, like we said before, Bellamy has done a lot of crappy stuff, but this is like, this would be the worst. Well, okay, yeah, killing the mountain people were pretty bad too, but you know, he was doing that to save his people. At least this would be really bad.
Yeah, this is unprovoked, essentially.
Yes, exactly. And, yeah. And he knows the whole Indra Glexa thing. I mean, maybe he doesn't know it as well as we think he does, because he doesn't watch the show, so he hasn't been privy to all the scenes we've been privy to. But he, you know, like Abby and Kane and those people, and Lincoln, like, he knows Lincoln, he knows how the Grounder Society works.
It's hard as viewers, like, we assume that Bellamy knows absolutely everything because he's been there through all of this, but he did spend most of last season alone in a mountain, and mm-hmm. he didn't get to see all of the stuff that went down between Lexa and Clark and Indra and all of that. So it is a little harder to remember exactly what he was privy to, but we do know that since the mountain, and, you know, since Arcadia became Arcadia, Indra has been a trusted, you know, confidant for them. She has,
she was,
you know,
kind of friends-ish with Octavia for a while.
Yeah, like, she's basically, it looks like Indra has forgiven Lincoln and Octavia, despite the kill order, has basically given her blessing to them, and she knew why they made the choice they made, and she doesn't hold it against them. Like, Indra has, more than anyone, seemed to have become a trusted, you know, member of their inner council. Like, they're who she, you know, she is who they go to when they can't talk to Lexa. And to see that he's going to do this to her and her group of warriors, mm-hmm. like, these are Ton DC warriors, that's what gets me, is like, this is someone he trusts, and if he's willing to follow Pike over that waterfall, like, that's going to be hard to come back from. Yeah. So more than anything, that's the betrayal that I'm most upset about, is that Indra is, she's not just a nobody. She's not just a face that he doesn't know. Like, she's someone they all know and trust.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, but again, seeing him try to come back from that will be what probably will guide him through the rest of the season, through the next two episodes, and then some huge cataclysmic event will change everything again.
Then a meteor falls on yes. them or something.
Or just Jaha in general.
Oh, God. Yes.
Meteorite Jaha.
Meteorite. And, like, some other people step off, and they're like, we're the people, survivors of the Ark. And they're all like, oh!
Wait,
turns
what?
Out it was all a lie. There was another Ark out there. That's season four. Gosh. Yeah.
And then it was all a dream.
That too, yes.
And then there are polar bears, right? That's next?
Yeah. Oh, that would be really funny. Like, if they just put a polar bear out there in the jungle just as a reference, that would be amazing. I can't believe they haven't done that yet.
They used a gorilla instead.
The gorilla. See, guys, see, just the show might be pissing you off sometimes, but just remember the gorilla and it's all good.
It's all good.
It's like my favorite thing. Okay, so sort of wrapping up this discussion about Bellamy, I hope we got to some kind of clarity about it. I don't really feel much more clear about it, except that I still think it makes sense, and I totally understand why Caitlin and a lot of other fans are angry about it, but I appreciate getting to pick it all apart in my recaps, so I like it. And I just want to point out too as well, we did a little poll on Hyperbole's Twitter just to see where the 100 fans sort of stood on this issue, and I asked, will you be able to forgive Bellamy based on what you've seen so far? And 49% said that yes, because he had his reasons, and 32% said no, he's gone too far, and 14% said I never liked him. So I think that was Kyle and all his friends.
It's all Kyle's fault.
All Kyle, yes.
Kyle just voted a bunch of times.
Yeah, he did.
He's so annoying. Like, Kyle, I love you, but like, then he sends me this text. He's like, see, I knew I never liked Bellamy. See, I was right all along. And I was like, oh, you're not. Bellamy's awesome, and you are wrong.
This is, no, sorry. Just not even listening to you.
No. So any other thoughts on the Bellamy thing? Anything else that you really think we need to bring up? Or
I am so looking forward to this Octavia Bellamy. Like,
oh, God. Are you really? I dread it.
Well, we saw them have this really sweet moment the other day. Like, we had this really touching brother-sister thing. But I want Octavia to, like, bring him down to size. Like, he needs it, I think, at this point. He needs Octavia to get in his face and say, what the hell are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping Octavia can help turn some things around.
I hope so. I feel like Octavia is just out of there at this point. Like, I'm expecting her to leave any minute. And honestly, I'm almost expecting her to leave without Lincoln, which I think would be really interesting, because she's always sort of had this choice. Well, am I going to stay with the Ark people and my brother, or am I going to go to the Grounders with Lincoln? But now Lincoln is insisting on staying in Arcadia. Octavia wants to leave. That presents a super interesting dilemma for her, and especially with Bellamy sort of having gone to Pike's side and Pike being Chancellor and everything just being horrible. I could see her leaving. You know, I could see her joining up with Indra again. If Indra gets to stick around.
Don't kill Indra.
just please don't kill Indra.
No. Save Indra 2K.
Yes.
We'll just start the hashtag now.
Yes.
It'll be okay.
Oh, guys. In last episode, she smiled, and she and Kane were like BFFs, and it was beautiful. Yes. Mm-hmm. So just wrapping up our discussion about the episode, a few things we didn't really touch on, which was the Jasper and Monty side story, which it was really hard for me in the recap too, because it was so removed from everything else. It was like their own little spin-off where they went to the drop ship, and Jasper was really, really upset, and he had Speaking of Finn and people not liking him, he had Finn's ashes with him and he drops them.
The only thing for me about, like, Monty being upset basically for Clark,
yeah,
because Jasper was taking Finn's ashes and was gonna do God knows what with them. I don't even know what his whole intention was. Clark didn't even care about this can of ashes. Abby gave it to her and Clark was like, I already said goodbye to him. Like, I'm sure that she wouldn't be happy to know that Jasper has taken his ashes and God, you know, done God knows what. But ultimately, Clark said goodbye. Like, Clark is okay with what happened and has put it behind her and is, you know, working toward a million other things. But I'm watching the scene and I'm like, would Clark be as upset about this as Monty is? Like, I think Monty is the one that, like, those ashes are holding way more meaning for him than I think they ever would for Clark.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right, which is sort of lending an interesting dimension to Monty's character more than anything else, because he was sort of the speak piece for Clark this episode, as opposed to having his own. I just, in general, this storyline, like, this is the one that I sort of struggle with the most this season, because I feel like Jasper, it's kind of interesting in the way we were talking earlier about realism in television shows like The 100, and not having a character like Jasper who just completely breaks apart would be extremely unrealistic. At the same time, I really hope that something happens with his story soon, because there's only so many episodes that he can be this just unpleasant to watch. You know what I mean? Like, I sort of, yes. I feel bad saying that, like, he was a real person and I'm, like, crapping on his pain, but I'm like, yeah, but you're dragging Monty down with you, and I had such high hopes for this epic love story between Monty and Miller, and I've made my peace with the fact that I'm not gonna get that. But then what does Monty have then? Is this his storyline? Because I don't want, like, that's why I wanted something else for him. Like, I think that would have been really interesting and would have given Monty some kind of purpose in the plot. And right now, I'm like, you know, I'm very invested in his arc and if he gets to have one.
Well, I'm just wondering, if Monty's not able to bring Jasper back, what is?
Yeah.
Like, what possibly could bring Jasper back around if it wasn't Monty? So that's basically all that's left for me is Jasper just going to keep spiraling and spiraling until we lose him? Or are we going to somehow get the Jasper we all know and love back?
Yeah, I feel like for all that Bellamy's story is going too fast, Jasper's is dragging, mm-hmm. which is kind of ironic. Like, I understand grief happens differently for different people, and they've been through some really horrific experiences, but his grief has gotten to the point he's putting other people in danger. And once it hits that point, it's like, okay, we need to do something about this, because you have to stop putting other people in harm's way for your attitude. And it's just, it's hard to watch. It's supposed to be hard to watch, but it's just, it's dragging.
Well, my theory is that they're sort of saving him for Ja's return, because I sort of feel like he would be one of the first people to sign up for this virtual reality paradise that Allie is preparing for them. And I feel like that's why we need to see him just go lower and lower, and we need to see him just spiral further and further out of control. Either that, or they're setting him up to somehow betray the others, like Monty or Raven or someone that we really care about. And but that's sort of the only thing I can speculate about Jasper at this point, is that that's what they're building towards.
Jasper and Jaha versus Murphy. Yes. that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be something for sure.
I can see Jasper, like, signing up, you know, signing on the dotted line, like, you can take me somewhere wonderful. Yeah. You know, let's do, like, yeah.
Yeah.
I see it.
Yeah, that makes sense to me too.
Mm-hmm. So that's sort of like, I'm sort of holding my breath for, because we, from the promo for next week, we know that Jaha is going to come face to face with Kane, I think it was. So he'll be back in they'll be back in the same vicinity, and I think that's what makes sense for Jasper. And that still leaves Monty. What are they gonna do with Monty?
Well, I think Monty and his mama are gonna end up having words.
I think you are right. Because his mom, yes, I was,
she's
you know,
crazy trained.
She is. I thought that like she was looking at Bellamy and Pike's conversation, and she was gonna be like, go to Kane and be like, hey, they're plotting something. Because I thought he was a good guy. I'm like, oh, I'm really torn.
And then you find out she's just one of the 10 men he needs to kill these people, and you're like, no.
So annoying, so upsetting. Any other things about this episode that stood out to you guys? Were you surprised? I just wanted need to know, going back to something awesome, were you surprised when Lexa turned her bow and arrow, quote unquote, on President Coyne?
What show am I in? When she piked Nia?
Yes.
Like, wow. Yeah. And it made me remember Jasper getting spiked, you know, piked in the chest at the beginning of season one. And I'm like, she's not coming back from that.
No.
Like, Jasper might have, but she's not coming back.
Yeah, there was so much buildup to that character that it's surprising that she's gone so soon.
I know. I was, you know, because it's kind of like, you know, we're watching Buffy, all of us, actually, right now. And they sort of had that anointed one in season two, and you sort of, oh, he's going to be the big bad. And then Spike was like, boom, and he died. And this, I kind of felt the same way about this, where she was set up to be this big bad, and then she just got killed off. And what's going to happen now? Luckily, the Arcadians are plenty of bad to go around. So I cannot wait to see what's going to happen now, because what a way to change the dynamic. We were so close to peace between Arcadia and the Grounders. We were so close to them uniting against a common threat, which was the Ice Nation. And within the span of two episodes, we went from that to the Ark people being the threat that the Grounders now have to unite against, to retaliate against, and Lexa being in the middle of this mess, and Clark being in the middle of this mess. I'm almost feeling like at this point that the Arcadians like have it coming, you know, like not all the people, not all the poor innocent people, like they're kind of like the mountain men, you know, the collateral damage, but kind of like I felt like the fight back against the mountain men was justified. Like whatever the Grounders do to retaliate will almost also be justified.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested to see what happens with that. I'm very interested to see if we might find ourselves feeling like the Grounders are our point of view faction, as opposed to Arcadia, which has been how we felt so far. We shall see. Lots of interesting stuff coming up, and you can be sure that nothing is ever boring on the 100, and that you never know where the story is going to go, and I like it. It keeps me on my toes. All my theories are wrong, and that's fine. So let us wrap up the show now with some listener feedback. We actually had a surprising amount of people write into us with such short notice, and I guess you guys are all just very passionate about the 100 and getting to share your thoughts on it. So let us take the first comment from Samantha and then just run through them quickly. If Kristen and Caitlin, you guys just want to take turns with Kristen starting.
Sure, absolutely. Samantha... Yeah, I have no idea. Y-L-A-G-A-N. I'm not even going to try. I'm so sorry. She says, that fight scene in the 100, gotta love Lexa.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think we all agree, especially the two swords, because
oh my God, so amazing. That was like the best scene like the show has ever done.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to beat that fight scene. It was freaking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Nikki L says the Bellamy storyline just didn't feel like it made sense for him. Had they paced things better, it maybe could be justified, but I honestly feel it would have made more sense coming from Jasper or even Monty after learning of his father's death.
Not Monty. But yeah, no, good. And that sort of agrees with what you've been saying, Caitlin.
That's pretty much what I said.
And similarly,
yes, Mercy Asguera says Bellamy has no excuse for his stupidity.
Ouch.
And I definitely disagree, but that's, you know, it's after a lot of soul looking searching. At it.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Yeah, soul searching about it, yeah. So,
but you know, it's,
I can see your anger.
I actually kind of agree with the way this is worded. Bellamy has no excuse for his stupidity. Like, that's kind of true. I mean, what he chose to do, he has no excuse. Like, I know he's sad, and I know we didn't know Gina as well as he did, and it's very upsetting, but no, this is dumb. This is a dumb move, and he's going to be paying for that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shaft says, she's mad with power.
I don't know who this is referring to. It might be me. I don't really know.
Okay. Bellamy's motivation is super weird, given his past experiences with Grounders.
Yep.
Catherine McKee says, I loved the episode so much, but was traumatized by the end and really missed Raven and Indra. I definitely hear you on the Raven Indra stuff. I miss Indra so, so, so much. And I didn't even realize Raven wasn't in the episode until it was over and someone said it. And then I was like, yeah, where's Raven? What's going on with Raven? Like, why wasn't she here? So,
yeah.
Why wasn't she smacking some sense into Bellamy?
Seriously. Like, just smack. Do you want to go the same way Finn did? Smack. Like, I can see it. I can.
She's the one who would get really mad about the ashes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
More than anyone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Geek Freak says, very good episode. Pike is causing so many issues. I don't like him. And Lexa is queen.
Yeah, this is pretty much the same opinion I have. Yes.
Pretty much. Liz says, forget about the ship wars. Talk about how great it is to see Aiden, a teenage boy, hero worshiping Lexa, a girl. Mm-hmm. That's not something you see often in the media. Totally agree. Like, absolutely. I didn't think about it till I read this tweet, but it is really cool.
You know what I loved? I think it was the last week's episode where, I think I made a note of this too in the recap, that we had the scene where Aiden and Lexa are fighting and Aiden beats Lexa. And we have this moment of, ooh, like, that's kind of embarrassing for her. And I love that, because you would always have that be the opposite. Like, oh, this warrior guy is being beaten by a little girl. Uh-oh. You know? Like, that's sort of a shift of power. But here we had the reverse, saying that this warrior queen, who is clearly very, very powerful and strong, the fact that this little boy is able to beat her was sort of a subversion of what we expected, and I thought that was cool. The Hundred in general does stuff like this all the time, and I love it.
Natalia H. says, yay, that's my thoughts. Big smiley face.
I think that was to us doing this podcast. So we returned that yay. We were very glad. I also, and I have to give a special shout out to Liz, who's Lizzie_DS on Twitter, because she's actually the one that sort of inspired us to get together sort of last minute and record a special, because she said after the 100 episode, a hype special is a must. I vote every 3 episodes. And I mean, that's a really good time frame for us, because we obviously have a lot of other podcasts to do on Hypeable, but we all really want to talk about the 100. So I would say maybe 3 episodes, or anytime something really huge happens, or, you know, we'll probably just end up doing them all the time, because something huge always happens in the 100. But thanks for sort of pushing me on that, because it's so good. It's such a good show to podcast about. It's such a good show to talk about. So we're happy whenever we get the chance to do that. And we hope you guys enjoy these episodes too. And let us know if you do, and if you do want us to do more of these, because that's definitely encouraging for us when we have to sort of try to find time for it. And you can do that either by going to hypable.com, which is hypable.com. You can also find us on Twitter at hypablehype. That's hypablehype in one word. And you can send us an email, hype@hypable.com. I think that's everything. So thank you guys so much for listening. And thanks to Kristen and Caitlin for taking the time to talk the 100. I'm sure it's very hard for you guys. You know, gotta talk the 100 again.
It's a rough life.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we had such varied discussion on Bellamy, because it is definitely like when you're watching a show this intensely and considering how intense the fan base is, it's really nice to be able to sort of deconstruct both the things that we love and the things that maybe make us a little mad. And just know that we love the show still. I'm speaking for myself. I don't know. Maybe Caitlin hates it now, so we're going to watch it again. But I assume that we all still love the show, and that we nitpick it because we love it so much.
Mm. Yes.
Isn't that a fair?
Oh, most definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Great. Well, until next time, my name is Selena.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we're just going to have Kristen again when she's not a robot.
Dang it. Hold on.
She's Allie, guys. We figured it out.
That's my secret.
Okay, I remember better.
This is the alternate reality, guys. This is the virtual world. We're already living in it.
Ta-da. All right. Are we good?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm Kristen.
That's the end. That was weird. Okay.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.